Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, 11 African nations sign a deal to bring peace to the east of the DRC. Is a tougher UN mandate just around the corner?
I think the UN is thinking of really providing a mandate that allows the 2,500 troops that will be deployed to use force to impose peace.
And how the children of Mali are suffering from the conflict in their home country.
Many of the children that we see have experienced a certain level of violence. Some are having nightmares, some are quite withdrawn.
You will also be able to hear another installment in our popular drama documentary series, Learning by Ear.
Top story.
Eleven Central and Southern African countries have signed a UN-brokered deal in Addis Ababa aimed at bringing peace to the east of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The 11 countries, which include the DRC itself, have pledged not to intervene in conflicts in neighbouring countries and to refrain from supporting rebel groups. As part of the deal, the United Nations plans to deploy several thousand more peacekeeping troops to eastern Congo to support the 22,000 already there. I've been talking to David Zunmanu, senior researcher on the Great Lakes region at the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria. I began by asking him what sort of mandate the new UN brigade should have. How should it differ from that of MONUSCO, the existing UN stabilization mission in the DRC?
I think that is a question on everybody's mind, but definitely whatever mandate the UN Security Council will craft will be different from the one given to MONUSCO. That is considered as a fiasco in the Eastern DRC for the inability to really keep the peace and maintain the rebel groups at bay in that region. I think the UN is thinking of really providing a mandate that allows the 2,500 troops that will be deployed to use force to impose peace and also to track and hunt down the rebels associated with M23 with any other group.
The M23 rebels are not party to this agreement that has just been signed. Isn't that a serious flaw?
I think it's very important to realize that I think the UN wants to paint a bigger picture. Many international actors are aware that the M23 is a creation from regional partners. That's why the agreement makes specific provision and a call on regional actors to refrain from providing support. And without that support, the M23 will only be a kind of empty shell, without much influence on the security architecture in the Eastern DRC. But not really involving the political side of M23 into the agreement can compromise the effective implementation of this framework.
There are some 40 rebel groups in the DRC. How are they all going to be involved in this peace deal?
What is very important that this agreement is trying to achieve is to create an environment that makes it impossible for those groups to continuously pose security challenge to the state or to the region. And that is the reason why the UN mission is certainly going to be given the mandate to fight. Once those security challenges are removed, they will certainly respond to security concerns posed by Rwanda and use as strong argument to step foot in the DRC internal or domestic affairs.
So peace is now within reach in the DRC then?
We can say so. I think many people have realized, even the political actors have realized the importance of working towards sustainable peace in the Eastern DRC, because no one will be spared if rebel groups continue to mushroom in the region. They can pose challenge to the DRC as well as other countries that share borders with the DRC.
David Zunmanu from the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria. According to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, 500,000 people have fled the fighting between the rebels and government forces in the east of the DRC. 16,000 of those displaced persons found sanctuary in a camp in the hills of neighbouring Rwanda. But relations between the refugees and local residents living nearby have turned sour. Some of those residents have even moved away. Flora Kaitesi has been to the camp and sends us this report.
Kigeme Refugee Camp is located on two hills in Nyamagabe district in southern Rwanda. The hills are separated by the westbound Kigali-Rusizi road. Seen from below, the camp structures seem to be piled on top of one another, separated by a distance of less than a meter. The camp itself is surrounded by houses and small farms belonging to Rwandan citizens. This proximity has become an inconvenience to them. Agnes Mukamana and Maria Umuhoza live in Kigeme with their families.
Living near the camp is not good. We are always in constant wrangles with the refugees and their children. It's not good and we're not happy about it.
How can we not be concerned? For example, there are children who come here from the camp and destroy our crops and sometimes defecate in our gardens.
But this is not the only problem. A bigger one is the waste carried by rainwater that comes from the camp and drains into the homes of the people living close by. At the foot of the hills, the residents showed me how the water and the waste it carries from the camp settles near their doorsteps and mostly in their gardens. They complain of bad smells and flies which have caused an outbreak of diarrhea, as Rosemary Mukamusoni explains.
There are so many flies and they are spreading diseases. Now there is a dysentery breakout. The children are falling sick every now and then.
Many residents have had enough and have agreed to be relocated by the government, but complain that the compensation package is too small. This has resulted in another bitter exchange between them and government, which claims the residents are exaggerating the problem. Claude Rwahama is the director in charge of refugee affairs in Rwanda's Ministry of Disaster Management and Refugee Affairs.
Concerns that there would be diseases linked to the proximity of the camp are not true because the camp is managed by different agencies, including government ones. We have hired a company to channel the rainwater so that the water does not affect the local population.
Currently, the camp hosts 16,000 Congolese refugees. It's seriously overcrowded, which is why the government intends to expand it.
Flora Kaitesi reporting from Kigeme refugee camp in southern Rwanda. And you can find that story on our website, dw.de/Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
The people of Kenya go to the polls in a week's time, and campaigning has been overshadowed by the violence that marred the last poll 5 years ago. More specifically, it has been dominated by the upcoming trial at the International Criminal Court of two presidential hopefuls, Uhuru Kenyatta and William Ruto. They face charges of crimes against humanity in connection with the violence in 2007 and 8. Now, on Monday, all eight presidential candidates took part in a second and final televised election debate. Kenyatta had said earlier he wouldn't take part. Why then did he change his mind? A question for our Nairobi correspondent, James Shimanyula.
Mark, I think Kenyatta had to change his mind because it would have looked odd for him to be out of the debate. And there were a lot of articles in newspapers saying that, openly that his absence would have been translated into a coward fellow. And it would have been a shame for him to be absent when others are contributing to the debate.
Of all the candidates, which one has run the most effective campaign?
To be honest with you, I would say Uhuru Kenyatta has stolen the limelight, and it's because of his aggressiveness in campaigning.
Is the outcome of this election in the hands of voters who have yet to decide who they are going to vote for?
Precisely, as if you knew about it. The point is this. We have about 14 million registered voters. However, about 4 million seem not to know who to vote for.
James Shimanyula, full coverage of the Kenyan elections, of course, coming up in the days ahead here on Africa Link. One largely unreported casualty in the war in northern Mali is the education of young children. The United Nations says the conflict has disrupted the schooling of hundreds of thousands of young people who were forced to flee the fighting along with their parents and teachers. Many schools are closed and are unlikely to open any time soon. Damon van der Linde reports from Bamako.
When Tuareg rebels chased the government soldiers out of the Timbuktu region, Afiatu Gindu didn't move out. She stayed. Apart from implementing harsh Islamic law, the Islamic militants also banned women like Afiatu from working in the market, and she had to find other ways to feed her children. But when they closed and destroyed the schools, she decided she had to leave.
I am with my children who are in school, but there are no schools in the north, so the children will fall behind. So I was obliged to leave with my children.
She fled with her children to Bamako, Mali's capital. Here she's unemployed, but she's also scared of the violence in the north and is waiting until the end of this year's school term before she returns home. The United Nations says the conflict has kept around 700,000 children from an education. In the entire northern region, only one in three schools are still open. In Kidal, where a deadly insurgent car bomb exploded days ago, all remain closed. Only 5% of schools have now reopened in Timbuktu, Gindu's home.
I am not happy in Bamako. I'm happy in the north, but I am obliged to be here for the moment because of my children.
Edwige Depeng Sorgo works with Plan International in Mali, setting up emergency schools in the town of Segu, where many of the internally displaced are waiting to return home. Here they run catch-up classes for children who have missed nearly a year of education. Depeng Sorgo says that since the violence began over a year ago, at least 115 schools were closed, destroyed, and looted. Plan has created what they call child-friendly spaces, where they provide psychological support to children affected by the conflict.
Many of the children that we see have experienced a certain level of violence. Some are having nightmares. Some are quite withdrawn because of what they've experienced, and some of them have been experiencing a certain level of post-traumatic stress.
Through counseling and activities, she says they're trying to give back a normal childhood to those most vulnerable in the midst of conflict.
Damon van der Linde reporting from Bamako.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future. Welcome to Learning by Ear and the sixth episode of our radio drama on corruption called The Elephant in the Room. Throughout the 10 episodes, we follow the Odhiambo family and their friend Jeffrey Thiong'o in their struggle against corruption in daily life. In our last episode, Jeffrey publicly launched his new NGO Stop Corruption Now to an enthusiastic reception by the press. Jeffrey was caught off guard when he was asked whether he would consider running for parliament. Meanwhile, Isaac Odhiambo came face to face with corruption in his office when his colleague put forward some preferred candidates for a job. In this episode, the truth must come out. We'll find out whether Alfai Odhiambo, the father of the family, is really going to admit that his company is involved in the energy scam. But first, we join Lydia Odhiambo at her school, where she and her friend Tekla have decided to have a word with their teacher about some surprising results in the end-of-year exams.
Yes. Listen. Those are the end-of-year results. I think we should all give Jen a big clap for coming top this year. Yes, and of course, there were some other excellent results as well. Okay, people, that's all for today. Enjoy your holidays.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Tekla,
How did Jean get such good grades? I mean, she barely lifts a finger. I've never once seen her hand in her homework on time, and she never answers questions in class either.
I know. I'm actually quite shocked.
Come on, Tekla. Let's confront her.
Confront who?
Her, Miss Tatu, our teacher. She's supposed to mark fairly and make sure that it's those who work the hardest and do the best in the exams who come out on top.
Oh, I don't know, Lydia. She might get really angry with us if we suggest that she isn't marking fairly. You know, she's got a temper.
I don't care. Come on, Tekla. You're the smartest person in class. You should be coming top, not Jean. I'm going to confront the teacher. Come on. Excuse me, Miss Tatu.
Yes?
Do you have a minute?
Of course, Lydia. What is it?
Well, Miss Tatu, this is a bit sensitive, and I don't mean to be offensive in any way. But how is it possible that Jen came top of the class and not Tekla?
And what are you suggesting, Lydia?
I'm not exactly sure, but I thought you might be able to explain. Everyone knows that Tekla is the smartest in class, but she came 15th this year. How is that possible?
Well, how about you, Tekla? What do you think about your results?
Well, I'm very disappointed, actually, Miss Tatu. I would never expect to be top, but 15th? I've never been lower than third. It's like Lydia says, it feels like something strange is going on.
My mom's a teacher at another school, and the other week a parent came in and offered her money to improve his son's grades. You wouldn't agree to take a bribe, would you, Miss Tatu?
Listen, do you have any idea what teachers are paid? The long hours we work? So yes, from time to time I do accept a bit of help if one of the parents offers it. It seems to me I don't have much choice, and that's just the way it is. Now, if you'll excuse me, girls, I have to go home. I'll see you tomorrow.
I knew it. It makes me sick. It makes me so angry. What is the point of working hard the whole year if some lazy girl's parents are just going to bribe her way to the top?
It's so depressing. I wish there was something we could do. Expose it. The whole thing. I mean, it's not just our school. It goes on at your mom's as well. And I'm sure every school is the same.
Tekla, you've just given me an idea. Come with me. We will expose it. Because if the education system is corrupt, hard work is just a complete waste of time. Come on, let's go.
Lydia, where are we going?
To see our friend Jeffrey and my sister Sylvia.
What can they do?
Jeffrey's new NGO, silly. Don't you remember? Stop Corruption Now. Sylvia works with him. We'll tell them about the corruption in the education system and see what they say. Don't you think it's a good idea? Come on, we'll go there right now.
I hope it works.
When they hear from Lydia and Tekla about the bribery that goes on at their school, Jeffrey and Sylvia aren't at all surprised. Corruption in schools is a well-known story, but no one's ever tried to bring it out into the open. Jeffrey is very keen to investigate corrupt schools and the teachers who take bribes, but he needs Tekla and Lydia to get hold of some concrete evidence.
So, Lydia and Tekla, I really want to take this case on. I think we have good reason to assume this isn't just happening in your school. It probably goes on all over the country. What we need is proof.
How do we get it though, Jeffrey?
Well, Lydia, I think the only way is for you to do some undercover detective work. If you're willing, I can lend you the equipment you need.
I think I know where this is heading. You want us to record Miss Tatu admitting that she takes bribes, don't you?
Exactly, Tekla. Do you think you can do it?
Well, we can definitely give it a go.
Oh my goodness. What if you get caught? Will you be arrested?
No, don't worry. I don't get caught, okay? No. Look, of course you should be careful. Do it together. Make sure you speak to your teacher on her own in her own classroom. That way, she shouldn't be too suspicious. Now, are you sure you're up to it, girls? You don't have to, you know?
No, we'll do it. But I am scared.
No, well done. I think you're both very brave. Go with Sylvia. She'll give you the recording equipment and explain how to use it and how to hide the recorder. Good luck, girls.
Just like his daughter Lydia and her friend, Alfayo also finally summons up to the courage to go to Stop Corruption Now. But Alfayo isn't alerting them to a new corruption scandal. He's given Jeffrey information on the huge energy scam that they are already investigating. Unfortunately, he was only able to do so because he and his company are involved. Jeffrey's asked Alfayo to meet him in a cafe to go over his statement.
So how are you feeling, Alfayo Odhiambo? Ready to face the music?
You know, I wondered whether you'd asked me to meet you in a cafe rather than your office because you plan to have the police waiting for me with handcuffs.
Well, it did cross my mind. No. Of course not. I thought it would be better here because your daughter Sylvia is working with me and I wasn't sure whether she knew about your part in this.
Good thinking. No, she doesn't. Well, not yet anyway. None of the family do. They're going to get such a shock. What have I done to get myself into this mess? What will I say to Jennifer? I've left them all down, Jeffrey.
Listen, Alfayo, don't be so hard on yourself. They'll understand eventually. You're not a crook. You didn't realize what was going on until it was too late. And now, you're doing the right thing. We really need your testimony if you're going to win this case. We've got a lot of written evidence against the energy minister and his cronies, but no first-hand witnesses. Are you quite sure you're willing to do it?
Don't ask me again, or I might change my mind. To be quite honest, I've thought through all the options so many times, and I can't think of any other way out. They're after me anyway for refusing to help them in the run-up to the elections. I put everything I had into those big contracts of theirs. Without them, me and my company are financially ruined. But worse than that, they've ruined my reputation. I want to see them go down.
Good. So let's get them. But be prepared for a rocky ride. Whistleblowing sounds easy, but it's tough, believe me. Just remember, I'm your friend, and I'm always here for you.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Oh, right. Let's sign these documents and then your life is in our hands. No. Just joking. Don't worry, Alfayo. It will be all right in the end, I promise.
And that brings us to the end of the sixth episode of our radio drama on corruption, The Elephant in the Room. This series is based on actual events. It's a difficult time for Alfayo, but he's determined to stand up against corruption. And will Lydia and Tekla get away with secretly recording their teacher? Will they be able to get her to say more about taking bribes? Find out what happens in the next episode of our radio drama. If you'd like to hear this program again, please visit our website at dw.de/LBE. Goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.
And before we end this edition of Africa Link, a reminder of our main stories. 11 Central and Southern African countries have signed a UN-brokered deal in Addis Ababa aimed at bringing peace to the east of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Candidates in Kenya's presidential elections have been taking part in a second and final televised debate 1 week before polling day. We've also been hearing how the fighting in Mali has disrupted the education of hundreds of thousands of schoolchildren. Remember, we welcome your comments on Africa Link. We look forward to receiving text messages sent to 49150957 59510. That's 49150957 59510. Emails addressed to feedback.africa@dw.de or letters posted to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. This programme will be back again at the same time tomorrow. Do join us if you can. Until the next time, this is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.